Hi, it's Addison Santee.
And I'm Michaela Lee, and today I'm here to interview
Lily,
Mrs. Stanley,
and Mrs. Erickson
to catch a personal view of what the CARE conference experiences around were like for them.
I'll start off today by asking, have you guys ever been a host family before?
So my family hosted kids from Collins Academy, but I don't think we as a family haven't before, but I know, I think my mom had one, like foreign exchange students when she was a kid, but my family hasn't before. It's the first time.
I bet it's super exciting.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were not a host family for a foreign exchange student. We've done some short-term hosting of other families and children, but we have never had other students from other schools stay with us. And it was really exciting to get to know them and to have them be part of our family for a few days.
Yeah.
So tell us about some of the people you had the opportunity to host for.
So my family, we hosted two junior girls, Kenesha and Brianna.
What were they like? Like, what were, like, interesting things you got to know about them?
Well, they kind of had this ongoing argument all weekend over which was better, macaroni with shell noodles or elbow noodles. And then Kenesha was also making fun of Brianna for having never seen Bambi before.
The school, Collins Academy, where the students came from, is actually quite a bit smaller than Mount Vernon. I would say it's the size of the school itself is more like Solon or Lisbon. I think they have about 45 people in their graduating class, and freshman classes usually start around 75 students. So they are all really tight-knit. The whole senior class knows each other. They're not all friends like you would imagine, but they all did know each other. And I think one of the cool things is about hosting them here in Mount Vernon is these are students who have grown up with very different experiences than students here at Mount Vernon. And it was good for them to experience culture at Mount Vernon. Also, Mount Vernon students each year go out to Collins Academy to try to get to know students there better. And part of this is about breaking down our racial biases and being able to build authentic relationships with people by having them be in our spaces and live life with us for a few days so that we can get to know them. And I hosted two girls named Tahara and Tamara, and they both are incredibly smart, thoughtful, sweet young women. And I was thankful to get to know them, to have really in-depth conversation about those problems that they're experiencing in their neighborhood and preparing for the world, which looks a lot different than our white students here in Mount Vernon prepare for the world and the struggles they face in some ways, and then in some ways they look very much the same. And so I think it's important for students to see that too. We so often talk about each other by our differences and fail to recognize that there are a lot of things about us that are quite the same, and that helps us to really care about each other more.
We also had like lengthy conversations about the similarities and differences between like our school systems and our neighborhoods. My mom really liked to talk to them about the school environment and how it differs, probably because she's an educator. And she's really interested in knowing like the differences between they get to choose who they education systems and policies and things like that.
What was something like really big you noticed like that was different from Mount Vernon in their school, like that you guys talked about or anything that really came out to you?
I didn't host a family, but when we talked to students at the Moling event and at the potluck event and in their session, they talked a lot about the wearing of uniforms. And they also talked about having to be screened when they came into the school every day, having to walk through a metal detector, and having hired security guards who were not educators pick at them about whether or not they were correctly attired.
That's so different.
It is. And they asked that in their session. So these students split into two groups and hosted two different sessions for the CARE conference. And one session, in one session, they talked a lot about, in fact, they asked people at that session, what does the beginning of the school day look for, like for you? And students said, oh, Mr. Brand is usually in the front asking me, you know, how I'm doing or how my weekend is or making small talk about a game. And then they said, well, ours is as soon as we come in, we're immediately yelled at. Take off your backpack, put it on the conveyor belt, tuck your shoes in, what color is your belt? And that can be really difficult if you're already having a bad day to start off the day like that. One of the students also very interesting, but she said, I understand why my principal does it. As Black people in this country, we're expected to be perfect and never make mistakes. And she wants us to be prepared for that reality when we leave high school. And I think that's a reality that as white people, we cannot begin to understand, but we need to start recognizing the ways in which we do that to other people.
That would make it harder to like wake up and like know you have to go to school every day and then
To learn. You might, and one of the things they said is you might be walking into the building having a good day and then you're yelled at and it immediately sets you off and then you're in a bad mood for the rest of the day. And that really is what the CARE conference is all about, hearing and understanding other people's stories. So each of the 27, I believe, presentations was really about getting to know people and learning from people, often people of color, about their areas of expertise.
We talked briefly. You brought up their principal, and I remember we had a conversation. My mom and I had a conversation with. We were sitting around eating breakfast, I think Saturday morning, and we were just talking. And they brought up their principal and how she was pretty new, and that she's, I think they said that she stayed the longest in the past couple of years, something like that, and how they thought she was strict but knew it came from a place of trying to prepare them
for real life.
I also got a chance to talk to the teachers that came as chaperones too, a little bit. That was a good experience. Kind of bonded with Miss Duggan, on the college visits.
She was very fun. It was her. She was the one leading the session that I went to. The teacher aide, because the students were doing the leading, but she was there helping them out. And one of the things that surprised me was both a similarity and a difference for our students and Collins students was their work outside of school and how many hours some of them had to put in and how that impacted, you know, their ability to get their homework done.
Do activities in school as well, like sports and stuff.
They didn't even really talk about activities in school that much. They just talked about how, you know, they have to work to buy the things that they need just to pay the tuition at the school, because that's another major difference.
Really? Student fees,
Their tuition was something incredible, like $800 a semester.
It's a public school, to be clear. It's not a private school, but they have a lot of student fees. And part of that is because schools are financially supported by property tax. And so if the homes in the area have low property values, the school will not get a lot of money. So, for example, here in Mount Vernon, I am able to, as a teacher, to walk into the supply room and get whatever I need. At Collins Academy, I had to buy my own paper for copies. The supply room was locked. Anything that I wanted students to have or I wanted for my classroom, I had to purchase myself. So part of why they have higher fees or that burden is put on the students is because they don't have the money from the state for books and other supplies. They also have student IDs, and what their punishment is often financial. If they lose something, they have to pay money to have a new one made, etc. So there is a really heavy financial burden on the students
because the school doesn't have much money to support all of the items.
Okay.
Yeah.
That also, that lack of funding also showed up when they talked about the adults in the building who were there to help them. Mm-hmm. They talked about differences in teachers and how friendly and available some teachers were versus others. But they also said to us that they didn't really have a counselor.
Really?
They didn't really have a counselor for their emotional needs. Like, there wasn't necessarily someone to talk to. And even their post-secondary planning, they didn't really have a lot of support in that avenue either.
Yeah.
Just because all the people in the school had to do practically double jobs just to keep it going. And the class numbers were really large and the turnover was really high. Like, they can't pay people, they don't stay.
I talked about that with Kanisha and Brianna. They talked about how currently they don't have a math teacher for the freshmen.
Really?
Yeah. Because the math teacher couldn't support themselves on what they were paying them, so they quit, and so the freshmen were left without a math teacher. And there's a lot of teachers where that happens,
mm-hmm.
and there are sometimes times where they don't have a teacher for a certain subject.
And the principal's teaching the math class now. I think the principal teaches mm-hmm. three classes mm-hmm. during the day in addition to being a principal.
That's a lot to take on. So you were saying earlier about how they had uniforms, but I think that's interesting because, like, here, like, if you have uniforms, usually you're a private school, but they're a public school. I thought that was interesting because, like, they have uniforms at a public school.
Mm-hmm.
Did they just do that for, like, safety?
Yep. You see that a lot more, I think, in schools in the city and urban schools. There's a lot of stigmatizing about urban cultural dress, trying to... And so there's a lot of different reasons, I think, for uniforms. And I couldn't mm-hmm. tell you exactly what the reasons that Collins has uniforms are. There are some really good reasons. Uniforms don't let you know who has more than who.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those students would argue they still do. You can still tell by your belt and your shoes and mm-hmm. things like that. Uniforms help to diminish any gang affiliation if there are students who are affiliated with gangs in the area, which there are, because colors... is a sign of your affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
Uniforms can help to diminish bullying for what students are wearing. And so there are good reasons for uniforms.
Yeah.
And then there are reasons that there are things that aren't good. So some students would say, well, we know who's in what gang. We know who's poor and who's not. The uniforms aren't hiding that. They're just taking away our creativity and our ability to be ourselves. And as a teacher at Collins Academy, you had so much to pay attention to. For every uniform infraction was a point, and then a point went to the system. And if you got 4 points of the day, you would have a detention. And there was just so much work to try to monitor all of these minor behaviors that you were off. And again, this was 10 years ago. I don't know if it's different now, but I often felt like I was constantly at odds with students
mm-hmm.
and was not wanting to have a conversation with a kid about his shirt not being tucked in because
mm-hmm.
I knew he was in a bad place. But I also knew if my principal walked in, I would hear about not having that conversation with that student. So it does. So, and that's another reason why teachers leave. It's a very stressful environment.
You brought up detention, and I remember talking to students, but
two amazing presentations.
Mm-hmm.
They are smart, they are funny, they are caring, they are such individuals. They are not all one entity defined by their community or their race or their socioeconomic status. They are each wildly unique, just like every student here at Mount Vernon. And that is part of why it's important for us to be in relationship with them, because we need to recognize that they are wildly unique individuals, which is what makes them human. And the more that we see people who are different than us as fellow humans, the less likely we are to dehumanize, discriminate, use our power to hurt So I hope that everybody listening gets the chance at some point to come with us to Chicago and meet students at Collins Academy. I hope that you have built relationships with the people who were here at the CARE Conference. I hope you take one of the classes here that introduce you to a world outside of Mount Vernon, because it is only in that that you can, I think, develop the heart for compassion that will actually change the world.
I will say, as someone who has taken those classes and has gotten the opportunity to as a student, it does change. Like your
whole life. And it's fabulous. And if you're a white student listening, it will maybe be the first space you've ever been in where you'll be one of the very few white people in the room. If you're a student of color listening, come. Be celebrated, your culture, your values. Be with other students of color in Iowa and talk about what it's like to be a person of color in this state.
Yeah.
Come, see me, sign up.
I have another question for you guys. So what do you feel like you've learned from this CARE experience, and how do you think it's going to affect you moving forward from this situation, from this experience?
Well, I just really was just learning how to connect with people my own age who have different lived experiences than me, and being able to see the similarities and differences between our lives. We all went sledding on Friday night that they were here, the Friday night that they were here, and they all said that they'd never been sledding before.
And that kind of amazed me
because, like, growing up here in Mount Vernon, I went sledding all the time. And
there's no hills in there.
That's what my mom said. She was like, well, there's no hills.
I'm guessing they don't block off any entire streets that you can sled down. No?
Just us. Yeah. But it was just really fun to get to hang out with them and learn about them and all that they've been through in life, and just to hear the stories and get to know them as people and gain new friends.
I was delighted to learn more at the conference. I went to this session put on by students from Meskwaki Settlement and the local high school, South Tama, thank you. And they were very fun to listen to. They were really sharing with us the definition of a settlement versus
a reservation.
Thank you. Words are escaping me. And the fact that they have settlement day and they have a whole celebration that's open to the public. So that happens in July. And cool. I think it's actually called Proclamation Day, maybe. It's the day that the settlement was proclaimed theirs. And they have a powwow, and I learned a little bit more about what that means and a little bit more about the different kinds of dancing that they can sign up to do competitively.
That's so fun.
And I didn't know that, you know, some basic white people could just go show up and watch that and that would be okay. I really felt like that might be an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel invited and I intend to go.
I think that whenever I talk about what we're doing here in Mount Vernon with other people, they say things like, how do you get students engaged in this? And how are you getting people on board with this? And my answer is often, I just always assumed that they would be on board and engaged.
Yeah.
And I never believed for a moment that collectively they wouldn't be. And students have always risen to the high beliefs and expectations that we have held for them. And the CARE Conference is no different. It is beautiful to watch them authentically engage with people who are different than them, to step outside of their comfort zones. Does everyone do it the same? No. Do we still have issues? Absolutely. But the one thing, the CARE Conference, things like hosting Collins Academy students, teaching these courses, always does is give me great hope for our future. I truly believe that this education is vital to creating positive leaders here that go forth into the world, and whenever I see you guys in these spaces, I'm just filled with hope and tears often. I have to care about people. I could tell you a lot of statistics about racial disparities, mm-hmm. but none of that will matter if you don't know anyone who's impacted by them. And so very early on in my head, I thought, how can we help yeah. people in this community mm-hmm. know other people?
Mm-hmm. That's a really true statement, because even this year, I mean, I've kind of worked alongside you for a couple of years now doing some of these things, but listening to one of our guest speakers, Sophia Mahaffey, talk about situations that she has lived through that are really similar to situations.
So to wrap this conversation up, I just have one last question for you guys. So as we know, this event has touched us all. And at what point did you all feel most impacted by this experience?
I think this year and with this experience specifically, I feel most impacted when not getting to meet the students from Collins Academy and getting to talk to them and getting to hear their experiences, like I said, and getting to know the differences between how we've grown up and how our lives have differed, even though we're the same age yeah. and we live in the same country, mm-hmm. and we only live like 4 hours apart.
Yeah.
Like with the whole because they live in a city, they've never gone sledding before, mm-hmm. and when they came here and went sledding for the first time, that was that was a fun time. Learning firsthand how our upbringings are different and how we've just had different experiences in life and had mm-hmm. What has impacted their lives versus what has impacted my life mm-hmm. and how things I've only just learned about or things that they've known about their entire lives stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had two very impactful things that I could talk about. First, some of the classroom readings that Mrs. Erickson brought in mm-hmm. were things that I hadn't read before. So yeah. a chapter from the book, So You Want to Talk About Race, was very useful for me in as it was meant to be in getting past the question of, is it about race? Gave yeah. us a nice couple of steps that were very clear. If a person of color thinks it's about race,
yeah.
for instance. That was the first one. And if it differently or disproportionately affects people of color, then it's about race. Mm-hmm. And I was able to use some of that language when sharing an article about the policies of a high school in Texas regarding student hair. So a young man in a Texas school was not going to be able to walk across the stage for his graduation unless he cut his hair, which is in dreadlocks. Mm-hmm. And they claim that the issue is length, not the style, but it seems as though there are many students who are not of color, whose hair yeah. is not in dreadlocks, mm-hmm. that violates the length policy, and so it is unequally enforced. So when I shared information about that on my social media, I was able to use the language from that article. So that was impactful. I felt a little bit more empowered to yeah. have those conversations.
It's amazing.
The other impactful thing was getting to know an individual, a local activist named Sophia Mahaffey, who was a single mom, as I was, who had some similar medical procedures that I have had done, and her experience was very different. She almost died, whereas I was given very clear instructions about what to watch out for. Mm-hmm. And when I called back in to the doctor's office that same evening, and I was experiencing some blood loss, they're like, get in here right now. And I said, can I eat some cookies? Because I'm really hungry. Then the nurse said, no, you get in here right now or you're going to bleed to death. But in her case, she went to them and she said, I'm hemorrhaging, I'm bleeding way too much. And they're like, oh no, it's just your period. And they didn't listen to her. So there's a level of knowing about differences and implicit bias and how they can affect even your very life. And even when the medical professionals may not understand what's happening to them and the way that they see things, they need more training for that. So there's a level of knowing, but then there's hearing someone's personal story who lives near you, who's roughly your age, who's gone through similar experiences, but those experiences have taken a whole different turn.
Yeah. I have two also. I have told this story before. When I was teaching at Collins Academy, I had a student who I absolutely loved. His name was Javon Barnes, and or Jay, little Jay, as we would call him. And he was just one of those kids that was a really hard year for me. I still had not unpacked all of my biases. There's a million things I did wrong in the classroom. It just was terrible. And he always was able to bring me back. We would he made me laugh. He totally killed me in basketball, even though he was like 5'1" and I'm not that bad. The first year we went back to Collins Academy after that, I had learned that he had been shot and killed at about 4:30 in the afternoon right outside of the school, mistargeted. He wasn't involved in any sort of activity. And so this year I was talking with the girls. We were out to dinner Friday night, and I was telling them, or I mentioned Javon, and Tamara goes, "That's my cousin. He has a baby. We call him Baby Jay. He lives with my auntie." Wow. So it was really beautiful to be able to talk about him with her and to know that this person who he would never begin to know the way that he impacted me, that I get to spend some time with someone who really loved him.
That's awesome.
And who felt the pain of his loss in a profound way. My second moment of, I think, profound emotion and understanding was during one of the group sessions at CARE conference, and someone asked a question like, "Well, what do you want us to know about you?" And they answered, "I like ice cream, I play this, blah, blah, blah." But then Dr. Badenhorst said, "Okay, imagine you're in Mount Vernon for a year. You're in this mostly white community. What do you want us to know about you?" And one of the students, Chamar, said, "I want you to know that I'm not a joke." And that was a stark reminder to me of what we sometimes say, either directly or inadvertently, the way that we define people. He is not a joke. He takes himself seriously, and he wants other people to as well. And I want to honor that in all ways. I think too often students feel labeled before they even get started. And we are more than that. Everyone listening is more than whatever label you feel like you carry with you. You are not a joke. And we vow to take you very, very seriously.
Thank you for taking the time to let us interview you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.